board.
Yep.
Okay. So tonight's topic is, I guess, a bit controversial. We didn't say what the conclusions were going to be yet, if there are any conclusions at all, but just the actual fact of discussing a question of gender interaction between men and women is something which is which seems controversial, and it's something which I guess which scares people. So, you know, that being the case, it's a topic which is a little bit scary to talk about. But yet, personally, I think that number one, because we're in the period of chauvinism, it makes sense to deal with these questions from a perspective of trying to achieve a little more kedusha and tahara in our lives. And number two, again, it's a bit of a risk for multiple reasons. But one particular risk is you know, the fact that I think it's worthwhile to realize that there are a lot of sources about these topics, and it makes sense to understand what the sources are, meaning without any interpretation. Again, we'll give some interpretations, but you know, just you just read the sources by themselves, it's worthwhile to be aware of whatever the sources are saying, even if they seem to be, at least the way we look at things today, very extreme. It's probably something we should know about. Okay. And either that means that it's usser, certain things are usser, or it means that we have to figure out what the possible leniencies are, but we should know what they are, because if we don't know what they are, then you're basically living a lie if you are doing certain things, and yet it says in all the books that you're not allowed to do it, and you say, well, it's fine, I do it anyway, I don't care. So that's also not really the proper application of the halakhic process. What you may need to do is consult and look at other sources or speak to people that, you know, are a little more knowledgeable and et cetera, et cetera. And maybe you can come up with some possible reasons why maybe certain things are okay, and where to draw the line. Okay. But until you've done that, so sort of feel like you can go around living and not really knowing what anything you do is based on, which at least in my mind is not really an ideal, especially when it comes to a question like this, which is, you know, obviously a bit of a sensitive question and also very controversial, and one which has a lot of makoros which seem to go against what, you know, maybe what some of us are used to. So that's what we're up against. And, you know, again, with the final goal of whatever we might see and whatever we might, you know, decide here, trying to see how we can sort of better ourselves and maybe, you know, go a little bit of an extra step to, or where the Torah is trying to direct us to go, when it comes to these questions. I'll also mention one other very, very important point, and that is that the sources are the sources. Interpretation obviously is left up to other sources to interpret the earlier sources, but the question of what the actual practices in different communities sort of varies on this point. Okay, I mean, if we're talking about gender interactions between men and women, which includes a lot of things, by the way, and we're not going to talk about all of them tonight. We'll talk about some of them very briefly. But that question, you know, just general sense of interaction is very, very different in different places. And you know, the things that we might say at the end, the bottom lines that we might suggest here are not necessarily the same things that can and should be accepted in other communities, both ones that are more, I don't know what you want to call it, more, you know, I don't know what the word should be.
Fanatical.
So right, fanatical, Haredi. I don't know what the word is. That's any word. More, okay, fine. More stringent and more lenient. Okay. Which basically means that, you know, every place has to have their minhag. And, you know, it's one who cannot draw automatic conclusions from, you know, any specific perspective that maybe we'll give tonight. It's sort of an idea to understand where what sources are saying and what some of the things are based on. And then based on that, to try to apply, you know, where a person lives, what should be done there. And obviously this is something which has to be, you know, with rabbinic consultation. You can't just decide on your own, well, this is what we should do. Okay. I think those are most of my introductions to this question. Okay. Let me see if I missed anything here that I wanted to mention. No. Okay. Basically, just the structure is going to be the following. First, we're going to deal with a lot of the makoros inside, which seem very stringent. Okay. Basically, the main makoros sound like they're very machmir about a lot of things. Okay. Step two is going to be try to figure out, are there any defenses of some of the customs that we have today in terms of interactions between the genders? And step number three is to be, what's the conclusion? How do we apply it, you know, specifically here in our community, in Yabidin and others that are similar to it, but also, again, just general, you know, directions where people could go with this. As last time, obviously Rav Orlean is I hope that he will have what to add here. This is, you know, my perspective. I hope that you'll give me a little bit of a compliment or slap me across the face if I'm saying something which is too machmir or too makil. Chas v'shalom, yeah. You can slap my daughter. Okay. Here we go. So let's start with makoros, straight makoros from Gemara and Rishonim, which are, you know, seem to be very, very machmir. I'll just tell you for each one what the basic topic is and basically what they say. Okay. The biggest one, I shouldn't say the biggest one, one of the big ones that the Gemara talks about in a number of places, is histakless. Okay. Histakless obviously literally means to look. And the Gemara says in a number of places, and it's possible in halacha, all these things, most of these things are in the halacha and the Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer. You know, so we have, do we say the Shulchan Aruch is here? It's in the med section. I forgot. Yeah. Okay. So just to get it, I guess it's worthwhile. Okay. So histakless is one. I'm not going in any specific order here. The Gemara says in a number of places that you're not allowed to be mistakel, even at a small, you know, the small finger of a female. It seems the idea is here her avera, that we're afraid that on the male side, at the very least, that inappropriate thoughts may result from this type of histakless. The question is, what exactly is histakless? Meaning it's passing the halacha very, very clearly in the Rambam, in the Shulchan Aruch, and many others. It's very clear. It's not so clear exactly whether it's Doraisa or Darabanan. That's a bit of a machlokas, whether it's Doraisa or Darabanan. But it's very clear that it's not allowed. Just read the lines in the Shulchan Aruch so you get a sense here. He says, Asr li'istakel b'nashim she'omdos al kvisa, women that are doing laundry, which they used to do out in the open. Even that's usr, meaning that's, you wouldn't think that's such an erotic type of thing, but yet that's usr as well. That's based on a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Baba Basra, I apologize. Then it says you can't, we'll skip some of these things. I'm not going to do every single thing here. Vamistakel afilu be'etzba katana, even if you look at an etzba katana, a little pinky, shalisha v'niskaven lehanos, and you have in mind to get hana, kilu nistakel be'es hator. It's as if you looked at the erva parts of her body. Okay, that's pretty extreme. So the big question they talk about here, which again, we're not going to go into in detail, just to give a sense, there's a big machlokas of what histakless is. Okay, does histakless mean something which is just like looking, just like this, like that, that, like that. Does histakless mean like this? Or does histakless mean like this? And I stare at you for 10 minutes now with very strange eyes, right? Yeah. Okay, so that's a question. That's a big, big, big machlokas among the poskim. We're not going to be machriya on that machlokas now. But let's just say that there, you know, on the machmir side, you can already guess. There's plenty of chumers about this. And you may have heard there are, you know, some people and you know, in certain societies and some great gadolim and even some many regular people that just won't look at women. Okay.
Or billboards, if you're going
to
go that far.
Okay. We'll mention it very briefly, but I don't think we're going to have time to get into it tonight. Okay. We'll deal with one of the other shurim. Basically, in terms of actual live people, so some people will just not look at women. And that's, you know, absolutely has a definite source in halakha and many of the svarim, which again, we're not going to go into, but basically it's definitely has a basis. At the same time, there also is a basis for some of the opinions, which is probably more what's, you know, going to be good for our society. Again, this is a question, but let's just say that the Mormekel Shita is basically to look at histakless as being a gaze. Okay, it's not just to look like an innocent look. Histakless is a gaze. Okay, it means to stare at somebody intently. And as the Shulchan Aruch says here in Ibn Ha'ezer, at least, that's got to be niskaven lehanos. You have to have in mind to get hana. Okay, it means you have to actually enjoy it and like have a specific pleasure at gazing at that image, in this case, you know, of a female. So, you know, the Mormekel Shita basically says his style, you can look at women, but you can't gaze with intensity and with enjoyment and with pleasure at a female. So if you take that approach, so it's already, you know, a little bit more, you know, dealable, I guess, in the societies that most of us are in. But either way, it's still something which has to be on our minds that histakless is definitely a question if it's done in the wrong context and in the wrong manner. Okay. To take it a step further, which again, we're not going to get into this so much now, but there is a big question about histakless when it comes to pictures. Okay. Which today billboards is a question, but even more today, the big question that everybody's, you know, struggling with is on the internet. Okay. Internet could be on a computer. Internet could be on your phone, which you have in your back pocket, you know, every single minute of the day. Is a big question. A lot of posts can say it's really a problem, meaning that the same way that there's a question of possible here or from histakless in the wrong way at a live person, The same thing may be true about a certain type of erotic picture. And unfortunately, these pictures come up all the time if you're on the internet. So that's a big, big, big question. And I'm not going to get into it now. Just, again, something which we may realize, but something to be a little more aware of, that obviously these images are seriously problematic, but also just to figure out ways, how do you avoid those images? And again, obviously, a filter is a very, very helpful thing if you can get them. They have options now for doing it on cell phones also. I'm not so up on it because my phone is a very, very simple phone. So I can't do anything with my phone. I can't do anything with my phone here. This is still this is a dinosaur. But again, just be aware there are some possibilities for doing things, which probably you're aware of, for filtering even with phones. But again, just the idea of that there is such a question here, this is an issue, is something that should be, on your mind. It's something you have to try to figure out how to best overcome. Anyway, so that's, again, very, very quickly in terms of histoclus. Okay, histoclus is definitely a big question in the Makaros. Before we go on to number two, any questions so far?
Do you want to distinguish between someone on a date and someone with his wife and another woman's wife? If you wish,
Your wife in general, you're allowed to have histoclus with your wife. There is a question during period of Nida, if you have in certain parts of the body which are uncovered, that may be a problem. The regular type of histoclus for, just regularly looking at her, and histoclus for covered parts of the body, meaning parts of the body that are normally covered, mm-hmm. that are normally uncovered, I should say. So that's, for a Nida period is less problematic. That maybe if you took that a step further and then you did other things, you started talking to her in a certain way, that might be more problematic. With somebody else's wife, that's definitely definitely a problem. Then we'll come back to that maybe. What was the other thing you mentioned again?
If you're on a date,
that's clear. Again, I think are all of us here, but yeah, most of us that maybe listening to this year. Most of us that may be listening to this year, this will be something which is not specifically relevant for, meaning that the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim say that if one is trying to figure out whether they want to marry a certain girl, then it's permissible. Okay, again, they discuss that also. It's not absolutely clear cut, but it's basically, pretty accepted. The Shulchan Aruch, the language in Siv Gimel, Sivan Chafal, and Eben Ezra, is mutterly estakla the pshnuya. You can have estaklus with somebody who's unmarried, lebodka, to check her out. Imhi yafesh, and if she, again, we don't want to deal only with looks, but looks is definitely a certain, one component of whether you want to marry a person. So in terms of that, the halacha is that it is mutter to do so. He just says lo yistakla baderos nus. Okay, you shouldn't do it in a licentious type of way, which again, I guess should be obvious to most of us, but again, that's the halacha. So it's definitely mutter if it's done properly in that context. Okay. Next.
One, you talked about certain women who had a haganath look. I don't know if it's necessarily a machlokas, whether it's permissible or not, but there is an element of, there is an element of kedusha of less, it's not, the issue here is not always one of mutter versus usher, but there's a kind of a sliding scale of kedusha that when it says kedushin to you, pushim and harayos and harava, etc., etc. So there is a kind of a sliding scale of kedusha, which is linked partially to interactions with the other gender. So some of these gedolim, it's not necessarily an issue to say that it's usur to look, or that there's one is required to have these black glasses, but they felt as a personal hanhaga for their kedusha, they felt that it would improve their spiritual development and growth by curtailing any such even permissible seeing they wanted to avoid. The second point is just since we all unfortunately talk about billboards, there are certain billboards or people just going on the bus. Right now it's winter, so it's not so bad. But anyone who has to go on public transportation during the summer, and there are certain things that everybody would agree is not allowed to be seen. And if a person does end up, unfortunately, as almost everybody does end up seeing things, what's mentioned, the Torah, important to mention is to move on, not to get caught up, not to get drawn to, as Ellie mentioned, the issue is not so much gazing at, looking at, staring at, enjoying the view, but to, move on and to let it make its way out of the less one pays attention to it. The more one pays attention to it, the more it sits there and gets recorded, the more one can A, avert his ways, and B, move on his mind to other things, ideally to Torah thoughts, that will let that, find, make its way out the back door. And that's the hopefully.
Those were two points. And I was going to come back to at least the first point towards the end, but that's fine. You mentioned it now.
I can be daring enough to try for that.
You can try, but she might cry. She might not cry. We'll find out, I guess. It's 50-50, I would say. Okay. Number two. All right. Now, this is more about basic interaction. Okay. What are the basic makoros that deal with basic interaction between the genders? So these are pretty scary. Number one, okay, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say something which sounds quite extreme, and I guess it is quite extreme. They say Tzarech Adam Leisrachek Me'anashim Ma'od Ma'od, that a person must or needs to. That's Tzarech. To distance oneself from women, ma'od ma'od, very, very much. Okay, it's not just ma'od, it's ma'od ma'od. Whoa, okay, again, Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, based on earlier Makaros, obviously, but it's straight quotes from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. Again, you know, the idea seems to be that the Mefarshim explained, people have desires, there's questions, you're who are women. All right, that's pretty extreme, right? And they go on, okay, what about talking to women? So there we have a famous mission about Altar Masicha and Ma'isha, you're not supposed to have excessive discussions, sicha, whatever sicha means, with women. When it comes to greeting, so there's a Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch also that says that you can't greet a woman. My goodness gracious, sivav and siman chavalat and Ebenezer. Ein shalim b'shlom isha klal. And you can't greet or inquire into a woman's well-being. And you can't say hello. Well, we don't know. You can't make a certain, whatever the Gemara and the halacha means, defines as a greeting, you can't do that to a woman. Even if you ask somebody else, you can't tell the husband, basically, send regards. Okay, you can't tell the husband, send regards, to say good wishes. Oh, tell her I say hi. That's what it sounds like the Shulchan Aruch is saying. The only thing you can ask, according to the Shulchan Aruch, is you're allowed to ask how she's doing. How is she? Pretty extreme, right? Now, again, why are you sending regards to somebody else's wife? You know, it happens sometimes, but I have to think about whether that's, you know, it's something which aims for Kedusha or not. But just the halacha itself is quite, sounds, at least from the side that most of us are coming from, quite extreme and a little bit scary. Next one. There's another Rambam, which I don't have open right now, but a famous Rambam, which may be connected to the answer, but it's also pretty scary, where the Rambam basically says that a woman shouldn't leave her house more than once or twice a month. Okay, anybody ever heard that one before? Yeah, right. All right. Where to get that one from? So again, I don't have it in front of me. I think it's in Hilchos Ishos, if I remember correctly. The Rambam says that. Pretty crazy, right? One more on this group of interactions. What'd you say? That's what it sounds like, right? So he wasn't so far away. He was in the Middle East. Anyway, we'll come back to it. Okay, again, this is the stringent side. And the extreme, you know, scary side. We'll come back to the other side in a few minutes, hopefully. Just to give you a sense of what the Makoros are saying here, that it's important to be aware that there are such Makoros, because otherwise, you know, you may not be being honest with yourself, even if we may have Terutzim and Heterim or whatever, but you at least have to be aware that there is such a concept and, you know, figure out where it can lead us. And the last one, there's a Gemara in Brachos, which basically says that you're not allowed to walk behind a woman in the street. Okay, if you, I think it says pogeya bashuk, if you encounter a woman, a female in the street, in the marketplace, then you're not allowed to walk behind her, basically, until she's far away, either four amos away or maybe even more than that, according to some. Okay, again, sounds very extreme and very striking. Okay, those are the ones that are, I guess, the most extremes. I went backwards here, but that's fine. The more intimate type of interactions, I guess these are a little bit more understandable, but again, just we'll say them out. In terms of intimate interactions, so we know, of course, that negiya, that contact, physical contact, is usur, male to female. We know about kolisha, which again is a whole another shir unto itself, which we're not going to have now. But listening to a female's voice is also, and halacha is also usur. Again, there may be certain cases which may be possible exceptions to the rule, but the basic principle is clear. I think those we're familiar with. But they take it another step. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say, when they're talking about distancing oneself from women, so it says, "Asur lekrotz biyadav ubraglav v'lermoz beinav lachad me'arayas." So you can't basically wink or make motions with your hands or with your feet to, like, you know, flirtatious type of motions to one of the arayos, to a forbidden, you know, female. "Asur leschokima," to play around with her, which we might translate as to flirt with her. Lakhil Rosh Kenegdat. So just, you know, sort of, you know, be a very, very casual, but not just casual, like, oh, you know, it's nice, you know, just casual, like casual, like a bit too close type, intimate type of sense. And then it goes into the rest of it, which is histaklus, which we talked about before. And the Shulchan Aruch mentions about walking behind the woman, which I mentioned before. It's in the Shulchan Aruch as well, in Sif Aleph, in Simchat Aleph, same halacha is there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, you get the point, right? These are pretty pretty extreme. And again, you know, from on one hand, we have to sort of think about, well, you know, how careful are we about these things? Maybe we sometimes don't do as much as we should. On the other hand, we're probably thinking this is like really extreme. You know, this is not what we necessarily see in many places. And, you know, is there any heter at all for anything that we live in, what we think is a normal society? How do we deal with that? So that's basically the one side of things. There's some famous shiurim out there that address this from these perspectives, basically, without giving the other side, which maybe they don't agree with the other side, which is fine. But famous for David Orlovsky. He does a lot of things. He's also quite humorous, if you ever heard any of his shiurim. So he's got a very famous shiur that is usually given to like 18-year-old boys and also 18-year-old girls or girls that are a little bit older. Basically, he like in his, you know, humor style, his way of trying to like show how like, you know, males have basically have hair for. That's basically what he tries to show. But he tries to show females, girls that don't necessarily believe it. So he makes all these funny jokes about it. What he's doing is basically just quoting all these makaros and saying, you know, that it's true that, you know, especially in today's society where there's so much, you know, pretense out there that these are things which really should be on our mind and not something which we say, oh, that's crazy. Like you look outside and look what's happening in the world. The world is going topsy-turvy here. And you can understand maybe where some of these things are coming from the other perspective, seeing what is happening in the world today. And Orlovsky basically shows how this is, you know, these are like real issues and, you know, basically are us, more or less. Rabbi David Orlovsky. The name of the show, I think, is called Platonic Relationships. Basically, what he's trying to show is that there's no such thing as a platonic relationship.
Orlovsky.
Yeah, Orlovsky. And I have the distinction of having gone to the same high school as he did. He went to Hank a long time ago. He's from West Hempstead originally, from Long Island, where I'm pretty close to where I come from. Anyway, so the shiur is called Platonic Relationships. Basically, you know, the question is, can there be such a thing as platonic relationships? Again, it's usually given to, you know, single males and single females. And basically his argument is that there's no such thing. It can't happen. Again, whether he's right or wrong, that's a different question. But it's based on these makoros, basically. Okay. Before we go to some of the other sides, some of the possible defenses of what we see, at least in our society today. Anybody have any other comments before we go on here? Don't stop here, right? Please don't stop here. Mm-hmm. No.
Good. Well, okay. I think a lot of the sources come from a time where society was completely different, and the role of women in society was completely different as well. You know, clearly, unless you live in Afghanistan or somewhere like that. Today, saying something like a woman shouldn't go out of her house more than once or twice a month is absolutely ridiculous.
Okay. Good.
However, if you go to extreme, that's what the conservative movement says all the time, or the reform in America says that wasn't written for today's society. The Torah is an ancient book that needed to be modified.
There's no reason to leave the house.
What?
Yeah, the internet these days. So you have no reason to leave the house.
Your wife is trained up, right? I just want to sort of reiterate what I said before, that a lot of this is a kind of a sliding scale of, you know, things here, not necessarily when the Rambam says, I don't think when it says to leave the house once, I'm not familiar with the source, I don't think the Rambam is saying that she is not allowed to leave the house.
It's not allowed.
It's a question of how much a person should make oneself available, attractive, being, you want to take it for once. You know, the question is, how much should a person put themselves in a position of being involved on a day-to-day basis with? It's a kind of a person should be aware that there is something to be said that people are people, men are men, women are women. There is a natural biological bond which between them, and it's meant to be for one's spouse. And but there is an attraction between the gender, and therefore the person should be aware not to be in situations and able to create or to find oneself in situations where the boundaries are being blurred more than they should be.
Are the obligations equal for the man and the woman?
Meaning
man has obligation, let's say, not to look at anything else, or not to stare. Not, we're talking about that. Does a woman have an obligation not to put herself in a position where a man can you know, stare and
the question.
Well, clearly yes, because they're
is it equal? I mean, is it the same? Is it the same?
No, clearly they're, I mean, the halachot of tzniut, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, it's a if men were angels and that women okay. wouldn't have to dress right. the way they do.
Okay. Put it this way: there's two parts that we could spend a lot of time talking about this, which we're not going to do. But on one side, the one flip side of the coin, which I thought you were asking originally, which I think is not what you were asking, but the first question is there any issur on women to look at men or anything like that? So the answer is for that, probably not, though there is some discussion about that also, but in general, I think the consensus is that women don't have any issur v'stakos of looking at men.
No. Yeah.
But, right. To some of the other questions, though, you know, the same thing, women don't have a problem of listening to men's voices. Most of those things are not relevant. Your question is there any problem, should a woman make sure to avoid putting herself in a situation where she's going to cause
right,
male to that's have that's these questions,
which is one of the arguments which very many women, especially secular women, make and say, "Well, you know, don't look."
Right. Good. Okay. So again, this is obviously a very complex question. What I'll say for now, in 1 or 2 minutes, at least my perspective. Again, we haven't finished yet. Okay, we're still only halfway there. Where we're there is that there. You know, let's put aside the Rambam for a second. Okay, the Rambam says, you know. A woman should go out once or twice a month. We'll put that aside because I don't think that's from the Gemara, from what I remember. That's, you know, like the most extreme one. Okay, that one, I think even, you know, in the most extreme society today, they may agree with the principle of what's called kol kod bas melech pnima, that in general, it is good for a woman to be inside because she's tzanua. But in practice, you know, no, I don't think most people today are going to say she must stay in the house, like most of the people anyway. You know, the wives have to go work because their husbands are in kolel, so like they're not going to say, well, she can't leave the house. They can't make a pronounce. Again, you know, obviously, this. I'm not saying that as a sad thing, but just the idea, I think most people would agree today that's not as relevant as maybe it used to be. The problem is that some of the other things here seem to be more halacha. I mean, the Rambam there is not saying it as halacha, and I think he's not quoting a Gemara. Maybe he is, but I don't think he's quoting a Sekamara. I think he's explaining the idea of that it's, you know, women should be tzanua, and that's the way he put it into practice, because in his society, you know, in the Muslim world, that's basically what happened. But a lot of these things are halacha that are from the Gemara and written as halacha, and they're in the Shulchan Aruch. And for a lot of those cases, there is something to be said to some degree for that. Maybe, you know, a woman who goes out of her way to make herself, you know, something which is, you know, going to cause harm for men in a certain way, may be guilty of lifnei iver. The question is, how far does that go, and what does that mean? That's not so clear. Okay, meaning if she dresses in a certain way which is not tzanua, so again, I think most poskim would agree that that's problematic for the purposes of lifnei iver. But to walk in the street, you know, or to what'd you say?
Cold and common parlance
dress. Okay, there you go. I wasn't going to say it quite that way, but yeah, basically, you know, that could be, you know, something which should be discussed. Again, you have to. Every society is a little bit different, and you know, every community is a little bit different. It's not a set thing. It has to sort of figure out where you are, and with some advice and guidance, you know, what does that include and what does that not include. In terms of, you know, let's say Kolisha, which we're not really dealing with tonight, so that's a big question, whether a woman can sing if there's men around. So that, you know, it could be there is a question with Neiver. It could also be maybe the man has a chiyuv to leave. Okay, that's a question. Walking in the street, you know, walking behind the woman, what is she supposed to do? If she's outside, she can't walk. So that one, not so much. When it's, you know, interactions going in both directions, you know, they're talking about flirting and winking and stuff like that. That really is a two-way street. Okay, so that's not really only just on the woman. That's both of them. Okay. In terms of greeting also, there's not really much that a woman can do. If she's being greeted by a man, that's not really something which is subject to that. That's also, I don't know if it's a two-way street, but at least, you know, the man is there. She doesn't have to run away if he starts to greet her. Okay. So again, as you see, it's sort of a, you know, it depends on the particular issue. And they're also, you know, as Ravoli mentioned, there's definitely a sliding scale, which again, we'll come back to in a couple of minutes once we do some of the other makoros. Okay. Good. Let's look at the other side for a few minutes. All right. Basically, we got to do something here because we have a lot of very extreme makoros. And, you know, at least the societies that we know today, you know, many of them don't do this. So one option is to say, okay, we're all wrong and we should go become completely Haredi, and Haredi like extreme Haredi. That's one option. Option number two is maybe, you know, what Chaim was saying, maybe things have changed a little bit today. And if things have changed a little bit today, the question is what Moshe asked, well, how far do you take that? You know, if the Gemara says something and the Shulchan Aruch says something, can you just say that it's not relevant? Can you just get rid of it? Do we say, is this the same thing as other areas of halacha where often we don't say that? Maybe here when we're dealing with a culture of society, maybe it is different, maybe it's not. And this, by the way, as we'll see in a minute, may be a very major difference, which you may already realize, but this is sort of crystallizes a major, major difference, divide between what we would call the more stringent world. Again, you can use the word Haredi if you want, but the more stringent world on these kind of things and the more lenient
world. This is one major, major difference between the two of them. How do you view these kinds of things? Do we say, let's look at the way that the halacha says it and say, okay, that's what it says, we follow it? Or do you say, well, for these kinds of issues, as opposed to Hilchos Shabbos or Hilchos Tefillah, maybe there's more room to say that it's based on the society that you live. So the second approach is going to be the one that we're going to see a couple of makoros for right now. All right. I'll preface this by saying that there are plenty of people that disagree with these. A lot of people disagree with the makoros themselves. A lot of people that disagree with the interpretation of the makoros. But given the societies that we see today, you know, there has to be some sort of validity to the understanding of some of these makoros, as you'll see. Okay. The best formulation of this approach that I've seen is, I think, Rav Yehuda Henkin. You may be familiar with, maybe not. His wife is the head of Nishmat, Rabbi Chana Henkin. Oh. Of course, unfortunately, they were in the news last year because their son was, and daughter-in-law were the ones that were murdered on the, in their car and wherever it was. On the
city.
What'd you say?
The old city.
No, no, that's not them. No, 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 it was the Shomron. They were their kids in the car. The couple was murdered. They were the couple, you know, as Rav Eitan, their son and daughter-in-law. Should be Zechron Lebracha. So anyway, you know, he himself is a posek, you know, a major posek and a big Talmud Chacham. Again, his wife is the head of Nishmat as well. He wrote a number of svarim called the Tshuvas B'nei Bonim, okay, which I have here. I have actually all four of them at home. He's also the grandson of Rav Henkin from America from the last two generations ago, who was also one of the big great Gedolim before the time of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Basically, he was the Gedol in New York before that time, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. So this is his grandson. So he basically, he deals a lot of these kind of women's issues in his tshuvas, and he's also written some stuff in English as well. This article that this is based on basically is in Chelek Dalet and B'nei Banim. It's in the Mamar. He has two sections, Shalos Tshuvos, and then articles or pieces, and this is Mamar Bet, which is called Hear Her the Hergel. Okay, you know, Hear Her, you know, problematic thoughts and Hergel and habituation. And they actually wrote this in he actually wrote it up in English in an article in Tradition magazine, Tradition Journal. I don't know how long ago, it was a while ago, maybe 10 years ago, I don't know exactly, which prompted some very sharp responses from other rabbanim, specifically Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, who used to be the editor of Tradition, who lives here now. You may have heard of him, pretty well known. And he was the Rav in Atlanta for many years. What'd you say?
Atlanta.
Exactly. His son probably even better. So he responded, you know, it was an exchange between them that was, you know, that was intentional, meaning they wrote it together as being one side and the other side. And Rav Henkin, Feldman disagrees very strongly with Rav Henkin. But I still think that, you know, Rav Henkin has, you know, a very strong point here. And, you know, what he says really reflects a lot of the practices that we see today. So basically, he puts together the following makoros, okay? You'll see basically what they are. Basically, what he tries to argue is that there is always a tradition of makoros in the Gemara and in the Rishonim and the Achronim that recognizes the fact that when it comes to Hirhur specifically on these kinds of issues, there may be some subjectivity to it, and it's not just objective the way that it's always usser or mutter or whatever it is. What are some examples? So again, there's a lot of them, but just give you one or two here that he mentions, and you may be able to think of more on your own. In the Gemara, okay, there's a very famous Gemara in Ksubos, where it says there of Acha, he was at a wedding, and basically he, you know, they were trying to be Mesamechas from the Kala, so he took the Kala and he basically, you know, he did piggyback with her. He put her on his back and he rode around with her. You say, how can you do that? That's not allowed, right? He says, it's just like, she's like, I think Kishure is the word. She's like a beam, okay? And I think there's another expression right afterwards in the Gemara as well, which is, you know, somewhat similar. Basically, what he was trying to say is that for me, she wasn't causing me any Hirhur Avera because of the fact that, you know, for me, I don't have any, you know, relationship to her right now that would cause that. Part of that may be because of his level of Kedusha. Part of that may be because of the fact that he was at a wedding and she was the Kala. So they don't look at her as, oh, well, you know, this might cause, you know, certain improper thoughts. Rather, she's the Kala and we're trying to be Mesameach her. That's one Gemara, okay, which he says shows you that obviously, well, what happened to the halachas of Negiah? Rav Acha apparently felt that for him it was mutter in that situation. There's another Gemara in Brachos about Rabbi Yochanan, a famous Gemara, used to sit at the mikvah and, you know, look at women when they came out, and that was supposedly, you know, hopefully was supposed to able to create some sort of, you know, spiritual, I don't know what, influence on children that would be born afterwards from, you know, having relations. And the Gemara says, how could he do that? Okay. And basically the answer is, well, for Yochanan, they were like karuki, I forgot the exact lashon, basically like kikaki chavari. It's like white geese. Okay. And I think that maybe also in the Gemara Ksubos, white geese. They were like white geese. They weren't, you know, he didn't look at it as something which would cause him hirhurim because he was on a certain level. Okay. Today, of course, as we know from the news in the past couple of years, unfortunately, you know, that a practice like that would be, basically, he'd be thrown out of the Orthodox community and put into jail or worse. Okay. But this is Rabbi Yochanan, and you can trust Rabbi Yochanan knew what he was doing. Okay.
Yeah, because you're so beautiful, right?
That's true, but I think it does, what does it say here?
Does it say? I thought it said he looked also. Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, just sort of
just the fact that he's sitting there, you know? Right. You have to look up the Gemara. The Gemara is in, I think it's a Daf Chaf Amud Aleph in Brachos. You want to look it up. What did you say? Yeah, it could be. I thought that there was also. Where is it here? Again, I don't have the Gemara in front of me right now. Yeah, I mean, just the fact that it says that the explanation is there. It says Damian like Kaki Chavari, that they're similar. They look to, they appear to me like white geese. Means obviously he is relating to the fact that he was looking at them. Maybe that wasn't his main goal. Maybe that was to look at them. But obviously, it's the fact that they give that explanation definitely means that it, you know, that's relevant that he's looking at them.
Understand that. Let's say you have a gynecology.
Ah.
You know, and that's, you know, from the other perspective, he's a kind of a gynecologist, right, that he feels the need for.
And that's actually one of the practical nafkaminas, which, you know, I think most postmen do agree with, that in that type of situation of a gynecologist or, you know, somebody like that, because it's their practice, and the Gemara has a different expression, and what is our bavita te tari, that he's busy with his work, so he's not thinking about other kinds of thoughts. And in general, it's usually assumed that, you know, again, assuming that you can feel for yourself that you're honest, that the person themselves is not going to have problems, then it would be halachically probably mutter in that situation. But
on that topic,
I wasn't going to go there extensively, but if you want one,
because actually what I wanted to mention, I was waiting for you to like to get to this sort of like part, but since you've already raised the topic, I think especially like in the community that we live in,
mm-hmm.
most people's interaction with women is actually in the workplace. Certainly, right. I think most people over here are not social with other people's wives. I mean, because that's not the sort of community that we live in. There's no opportunity to, and there's no need to. But in the workplace, you're working with women in a professional capacity. So, you know, what sort of boundaries should there be over there?
We didn't get there. Give me a few more minutes. Okay. But certainly that idea of bavita te tarid, you know, that you're busy with what you're supposed to be doing and you also involves interactions, that's definitely one of the strong components for a more lenient, you know, approach than some of what we were saying before. But let's finish some of more makoros, then we'll come back to that. Okay. There's a Sefer Achinuch about this. Again, Rav Henkin has all these things in his tshuva. You can read it yourself. Again, there's more makoros like this also. I'm just taking the ones that are here. It's just easier to find these. Basically, the Sefer Chinuch says, well, you can't really derive anything from that. Those are Gemaras. Those are Amoraim. They're on a different level than us. You can't derive any halakha from that. But yet, there's other Rishonim that actually do derive things from that. Okay, there's a Smak, Sefer Mitzvos Katan, who says that basically he's talking about greetings. We said before that greetings are usher. You can't greet a woman. We'll see what that means. But he says it's not allowed, except if you know she'odia ba'atzmo, if you know for yourself, she'ein tarbut yitzro, that the nature of your yetzer hara is not chashud, suspect, bisrach hirhur al devarim elu bichlal. Basically, your yetzer is not aroused by these kinds of things. Okay, I mean, if you're a person that doesn't get, your mind doesn't go in the wrong direction when you let's say greet a woman or anything like that, then you could be more makil. That's what the Smak says. So he clearly is taking again one of the examples that we brought, not all of them, but he takes one specific thing about the greeting. And so that can be a basis for something which is a broader heter, not just the people in the time of the Gemara, or Amoraim specifically, but maybe even something which is a little bit broader. Okay, and he's not the only one. Okay, the Meiri and Kedushin, also on Daf Ayin, and he also says something very, very similar. He says that when he's talking about also greeting, he says that basically similar idea. Actually, I think the lotion that the lashon I gave you was actually from the Meiri. The Smak says something similar, but a different lashon. And there's a very famous Ritva. Okay, the Ritva is also in Kedusha and Daf Pei Beis. I discovered it's not in the. There's two editions of the Ritva. There's a newer edition called the Madura Basra that they have now in Mosadar of Cook. I found it in Torah Chaim. It's a separate volume in Mosadar of Cook. And in that edition, he doesn't say this actually. Kedusha. Pei Bet. The Madura Basra, this doesn't appear, but in the original version, it's there. And then some of the later posts, it shows up, which I'll mention in a minute. He basically says, also, similar idea. He says that, Imakir ba'atmo shiyitzro nichna v'kafuflo, if you know that your yitzahara is subjugated, is not going to be aroused by these kind of things, mutalo, you're allowed to listakel, to look, l'daberi ma'erva, to speak with an erva, with a female who's, you know, aser to you, v'lishol b'shalom eshesh, and to greet them. Okay? Sounds pretty good, right? Good heter. The only problem is the Ritva concludes, and it says, it's not appropriate to be making it in this way, except for somebody who is a chassid gadol, who knows his yetzer hara and is honest about it very, very, very well. So that messes up everything, right? What'd you say?
Which eliminates all of us.
Exactly, right. That's the problem. This Ritva is actually quoted in later Achronim as well, in the Pischei Tshuva,
the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezra, Simon Chaf Aleph, that I mentioned to you before. So the Pesachei Tshuva actually quotes this Rishpa word for word. It's in parentheses. Why is it in parentheses? I don't know. Somebody added it in afterwards. Maybe the Pesachei Tshuva himself. I don't know exactly. It's in parentheses. I take it back. The first part is in parentheses. At the end, they don't have a parentheses on the other side. I don't know. Anyway, it's quoted here, including the last part. Okay, it's also there. So the question is, that's an individual kula, okay? With the limitation of the Ritva, it's an individual kula. The question is, even if you accept the more lenient approach of the Ritva, you know, ignoring the chassid gadol part of it, is that something that we can apply to an entire community? Meaning, is that something you can say only applies to specific people that are on very high levels? Or could you go to the next step and say, well, the basis is here for the possibility that we see that this could be subjective according to some opinions, that it's not absolutely black and white, and not every single Isser and Chazal when it comes to these topics is going to be Usser, Doreisa, or Drabbanan without any exceptions whatsoever. It seems like it could be subjective because the issues are subjective. The Hirhurim could be subjective. But is that something that we can apply on a broader level to a community where the entire community is premised on the fact that there's more interaction going on in the first place? So that's the question. That's, again, these are the halakhic steps that you have to go through. This is exactly what Rav Henkin does here. So here's the next step. Okay, so there are some makaros that do seem to imply that in certain situations it could be that the community itself is also, you know, possibly able to rely on some of these kinds of leniencies, at least to a point. Number one, there's a very famous Tosfos, which, again, the context is a little bit confusing. It's hard to explain. Basically, it's what they call Hishtamshus Benashim. There was some sort of practice in the times of Chazal. It's unclear. I can't even tell you exactly what it was, that they were either that women did things for them. They, like, you know, poured cups for them and made beds for them. And it may also be that Hishtamshus Benashim also includes, like, washing their face or, like, what a servant would do, which would may include some form of physical contact. Okay, it comes up in the Gemara and Kedushin in two places also, Daf Ayin and Daf Pei Bet, same place with the three Shonim that we were just talking about before. They're all based on those two sugyas. So you have to look at it inside, really, which we're not going to do now because we don't have time. But it's a very important sugya, that Hishtamshus Benashim. Again, I think it involves both of those two elements. Number one, possibly doing things which could be, you know, things which are intimate type of actions, such as, you know, things that you would not be allowed to do for your wife when she's a nida, you know, setting the beds or, you know, in an intimate way, or, you know, serving a person in an intimate way. But also it seems that certain kinds of physical contacts of, you know, when serving a person, of giving them food and, you know, I don't know, combing their hair, or, you know, things they used to do, washing them, whatever it is, seems to be also possibly included. And the Gemara says in some of those places that you can't do that. But then at the end, the Gemara says one of the Amorim did it with his granddaughter. Again, that's a whole discussion also. How do you deal with the granddaughter? But the Gemara says, wait a second, how is he allowed to do that? Again, without getting to the granddaughter part of it right now. The Gemara says, how is he allowed to do that? It should be Asur. And the Gemara says, but I hold like the other statement, which is that Akol L'Shem Shamayim. If you do L'Shem Shamayim, then it's Mutter. Okay, what does L'Shem Shamayim mean? So again, that's also a whole discussion, which I don't have time to get into right now. It means that you don't have inappropriate thoughts or inappropriate intentions for doing it. Maybe it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. Maybe it's for just, intentions which are not inappropriate. Basically, there's a Tosfos there, a very famous Tosfos, one line. Basically, what he says there is that based on this line in the Gemara, this is what we rely on, Al-Zeh Somchin, that we have Mishtamshim Benashim, that women basically serve us. Okay, what did he mean by that? Again, I'm not sure exactly, but some sort of similar practice of helping them and maybe even having some sort of physical contact, which maybe today we could apply to the case of a gynecologist or, let's say, a dentist who's doing things in your mouth. That would probably be the most similar case we have today, even though it's not really exactly the same thing, but just to give you a sense of what they may have been talking about, you know, Tosfos says that's something that they did, okay? And the Rama quotes it. The Rama quotes it in Ibn Ezer, where he basically says that the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to be mishtamesh b'isha klal. You can't use a woman, and it talks about rechitas panav yadav v'raglav, okay, having them wash your face and your feet and your hands, pouring water on you, etc., making the beds, everything I mentioned before. And the Rama says, well, some people say maybe in a place if you're not doing it in an intimate, affectionate type of way, rather it's l'shem, your kavanah is l'shem shamayim, then maybe it's mutter and l'chein nagu l'hakel dvarmi. Well, therefore, they were accustomed to be lenient in these kinds of matters. That's what the Rama says based on the Tosfos. Okay. Again, that's another makor which shows you that there is some sort of precedent for if there's a very common, you know, cultural practice, then maybe, you know, even if it contradicts some of the rules in the Gemara, maybe there's some room to be makil about it. Let's go on. Okay, Rav Henkin basically explains on this point that what seems to be happening here is that even though on an individual level of something which is usher for everybody because normally it's going to cause problems, and one person decides he's up to the challenge and his Yetzer Hara is not that strong, so that we said, you know, maybe you could be makil according to some Rishonim, not all, but some Rishonim, but on you know, they say even then, even they say you shouldn't do it if you're, unless you're a chassid gadol. But when it comes to a community, Rav Henkin wants to say at least that maybe if the whole community is doing something, then already we don't have to go that far. And you can seriously, it's what's called dasha barabim. Everybody, it's common practice. And therefore, in those situations, maybe there's not as much of a problem up here, or maybe you could be more makil. Okay. Again, there's a lot of examples. I'm going to skip some of them here just for the sake of time. Just get to one or two more, skipping the rest of them. The Yamshal Shlomo, the Marashal, basically he says very similar to the Ritva. Okay, it's in Kedushin also. And basically he says, Al zeh somchem ha'olam, and based on this, the world relies, these concepts we mentioned before, like the Ritva said. And he adds in two more things. He says, based on that, they also, not just hishtamshes benashim, they also look at women, and they also talk to women. Okay? So this is pretty close to what we have today, that he basically says that that's what the whole community relies on, and they do have interactions between men and women. And there's a Levush also, again, this is getting a little more tricky here, which I'm not going to get into now, but basically the Levush also seems to imply that, at least at weddings, there was mixed seating in his time in his locale. He says, based on that, there's a question about a bracha of Shasimcha b'ma'ono. Can you say Shasimcha b'ma'ono in the special Birkas HaMazon for benching at a wedding or for Shavuot brachos? So some people say you can't do that. If there's no simcha when you have mixed interactions between men and women, he says, well, if that's common practice, then maybe it would be allowed. Again, how far you take that is a question, but the point is that there are certain things that in certain places and societies, there were, you know, there were much more interactions than you might think would be let on if you look at the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch. And based on some of these Maramakomos, it seems like there may be some precedent for being more lenient if you're in that that type of society. And there are precedents in society. Also, Rav Henkin points out that in Germany, it was very well known that in Germany, 150 years ago, things were very much more mixed than, you know, maybe in other places in Europe and Poland, in terms of seating and interaction. And a lot of the poskim there, you know, didn't necessarily say that everything every single person did was usher. Again, you have this impossible idea that if the whole community is, you know, has a certain practice in this regard, then you could be a little bit more makil. That's the concept. The question is, how far does that go, and where do you draw the line? And that's the big question. Again, if you accept everything Rav Henkin said, and as I said, there are a lot of people that do not accept it. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that if you remember that basically the idea behind all of these specific things that I'm mentioning, Hadan and Shohar, emanate from not to be drawn after one's eyes, or talking about the possibilities of more specific, that the person has thoughts about women, it's liable to lead into outside. So basically, it's emanating from a way of avoiding thoughts, inappropriate thoughts. All of these things that Chazal meant are things that they established as typically things that typically lead to thoughts, and these are sort of applications of the principle, rather than, you know, so I don't think, and therefore the question that becomes, both for individual and for societal, you know, if situations are such where in this society this type of interaction no longer on a general level, so if, you know, if it remains that, you know, for 80% of people it still has this, it leads to inappropriate thoughts, and the person can say, well, I'm part of the 10 or 20%, so it doesn't affect me. But what he's trying to say is that if you have a society where, for overall, in 80% of people, it no longer has that effect, would that make some difference? Because, then that's the basic question. Are these things that were codified, you know, specific things that, you know, this, or these were just applications of this principle of avoiding things that lead to inappropriate thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
I think that's
more. Okay, we'll just go on to the next one and can have more questions or more comments before we finish up. It's obvious there has to be a limit here. I mean, even if you accept what Rav Henkin is saying, Rav Henkin himself, you know, points out very strongly that even if you accept this approach, that there has to be a limit. Okay, you can't take this to the extreme. So I'll just give you the way that he explains the difference. I think this is a very good chiluk, but again, obviously, he says himself, you can't just do this on your own. Okay, this is something that you have to really, this has to go to, you know, post him in the communities to sort of understand what, you know, what's which things go in which categories. Basically, what he says in his suggestion is that the difference is anything which is just, you know, societally based, you know, more closer contact between men and women than there used to be, you know, 1,000 years ago, or in certain societies even 400 years ago. Anything which is just, you know, normal, common interaction between the genders, walking in the streets, on buses, you know, in this place, in that place, in the work, in this work, whatever it is, you know, because of that, if there's a little more closer contact than there used to be, both in terms of interactions and just, you know, physical contact, that you're just closer one here and there rather than, you know, what used to be that it says that you met a woman in the marketplace, you couldn't walk behind her. Again, we didn't get to that, but there are some posts that seem to say maybe that's also a little more convenient, maybe. But that was dealing with a society that where it wasn't very common. Okay, today when, you know, there are more women out there shopping than men, so like it's a whole different ballgame. So if Hengen basically says that's his understanding, that would be the difference. Those kinds of cases might be included in this category of things that you could be more makil if it's societally based, you know, that it's more, that it's customary to do these kind of things. Any actions which cause more specific types of temptations for the Yetzer Hara or incitement, what he calls Girule Yetzer, would be more problematic, very clearly. Okay, I'll give the examples he gives, and we have to figure out where some of our practical cases are in the scale here. Mixed dancing, okay, obviously, not just if you're holding hands, which again we're not getting into tonight, but even if you're in a circle where the men are, you know, men are here and then the women are on the other side, but some are holding hands, husband and wife are holding hands, you know, anything like that. That's clearly, you know, dancing. Beach, he mentions, watching improper videos, all these kind of things, you know, or I'll just add some of the cases we had in the Shulchan Aruch of, you know, specific types of flirting or, you know, winking or any of these kind of things where there's a very specific type of message, which is that your Yetzer Hara is going to be possibly aroused more than just a regular normal type of contact of just the fact that the person is there, the woman is there, and you happen to be talking to her. Those kind of things that are more intimate in those ways, or, you know, more erva based, of actually seeing parts of a body which you're not allowed to see. Again, he gives a few examples here and he explains it a little more. I'm just giving you, trying, you know, Rashi Prakim. He basically says those would definitely be usur. Okay, we're only talking about things which are very, what he calls innocent interaction between the genders.
And
number
you're
two,
not
yeah,
being very specific.
Of course not. Obviously not. Well, I didn't finish yet. Give me a few more.
The handshake.
I didn't finish yet. Give me a few more minutes, and then I'll take a couple of seconds. Hold on. I didn't say anything.
I'm hearing you imply.
No. Absolutely not.
Okay.
I did not say that. Oh my gosh.
We're gonna listen.
Wow. Okay. Anything that we don't address explicitly was not addressed at all. Okay. No implications.
Just said everything's okay. Normal contact.
No.
This and that.
No. Every issue has to be addressed individually. We still don't have time to address every single one. Give me a big trouble. Okay. Just two more points, and then can take more comments. Number two, just Rav Henkin also says that this doesn't allow you to do something which is not being done already. Meaning you can't just say, oh, well, I decide that I want to be more makil than everybody around me. And if I start and then my friend does it and then his friend does it, and eventually you got 70% of the people doing the same thing, you know, so then he says that doesn't work. Okay, you can't do that. It means the explanation of Dashu Barav, we mentioned before, from a different context in the Gemara, that if it's already well documented and it's already well commonly done, so then he says you can sort of be makil in the footsteps of that. And, you know, and you go to that level of interaction. But it doesn't mean to go a step farther is going to be allowed. What about the first people that did this? Maybe that was a problem also. But once everybody started doing it, after that point, then the halakha sort of recognizes that and says in some situations that would be okay. Where is the line that you draw? Again, it's not so clear, and that's what I said originally. And we could come back to this now for a couple of minutes. Is basically it depends on the society. Every society is a little bit different in terms of where do you draw the line, or of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, what's usher, what's mutter, and which things maybe are mutter but maybe not so appropriate, and maybe, you know, you want to try to sort of avoid because it could lead to more problematic things. There are a few specific examples we could talk about before I do that. Any other quick comments? Did you want to say something now, or should I wait?
I haven't seen the tshuva, but perhaps what he's, in terms of his distinction between things, there are certain interactions where there's another person, let's say you're out of work, you go to an office, to a bank, and you need to speak with the clerk. There's a 50% chance the clerk will be a man, a 50% chance the clerk will be a female. Now, in terms of what you're trying to do, I'm not trying to do anything more with, you know, I'm talking to the person because the person is the clerk, maybe a man, maybe a woman. There's something in the interaction which is rooted in the gender difference, as opposed to the other examples of dancing. And mixed dancing is people specifically choose a opposite gender, usually, right, you know, for the dancing. Or going to the beach is a place where people specifically, these are things which I think that the gender difference is, you know, where there is a breach of the, where there is a direct breach of the gender difference.
I would use the word intimate to describe what you're saying. That intimate contact, meaning not just you're dealing with a person in a work context even, or as a clerk, you're dealing with them as a person, as themselves, rather than the job that they're, what they represent. So that could be part of the difference. That's not exactly the way he says it, but I think that's a very solid chiluk based on what he's saying. I think that works pretty well. But again, you know, where do you draw the line? So just as an example, first in terms of the the handshaking I was to mention. So again,
in the South.
I wasn't going to deal with the
in the South, yet. A gentleman never put his hand out first.
Okay.
But if a woman extended her hand, the man would say it. And in the olden days, when everybody didn't know about it, the rabbis would tell us, it's not proper to embarrass somebody.
Right.
A man would never do it in the first place in the South anyhow.
Right.
But when we put our hand out, it's not you do it to complete strangers.
Right.
As opposed to a French kiss, we wouldn't be allowed to do that. The handshake would be better than shaking the hand than embarrassing them. Now, in society in Israel, that might be different. But in America, that was what we had been told.
In the South.
Where the man didn't put the hands out first anyhow.
So I wasn't going to get into the questions of Nagia tonight because Nagia has additional questions as well. And a lot of the cards we didn't really address. But just in terms of that particular point, it's a big, big machlokas.
And taking money from a clerk directly.
Right. That's also a big discussion. Okay. Lamaisa, many posts. Correct. Yeah. Correct. I'm sorry. Yeah, that Reverlin is absolutely right. Okay. Those are two different issues. Just to focus on the handshake question, that's, I guess, the more questionable one. A lot of posts say that's really problematic. And I got in trouble once. I went on an interview for Kolel. I thought I was going to run at some point in the United States for an Aliyah. And I got in trouble with the person who was interviewing me, which was one of the big rub on him for whatever organization nameless. And he asked me about that question. And I gave him a whole story with all the rub on him that maybe say that it's okay or whatever if you're going to embarrass the person. And he got really mad at me. He's like, you can't do that. Don't you dare do that. And I didn't get into that. I didn't. They did not accept me, let's just say. I don't know. That wasn't the only reason why. But anyway, Baruch Shem in Eretz Yisrael instead. It's known that Rav Soloveitchik tends to have been not make lechachila, but basically what you described. If he was offered somebody's hand, there was this thing called the dead fish handshake, I think they call it, where you just didn't actually grasp. It went like this. And it's known in his Talmud, and many of his Talmudim, that if you're in a situation where you're going to embarrass somebody, that there may be room to rely on that. Rav Moshe has some chuvas about it also. He doesn't quite go that far. I think there's two chuvas, and one he says it's a problem, and the other one he hesitates about it. Some have said maybe from there also it wasn't the worst thing in the world. It should not be done if you don't need to do it. If you need to do it in a case where you're really going to embarrass somebody they don't know and you can't explain to them, then there may be there may be some room to make ill. But again, that's I don't want to get into that more than that tonight, just because Nagia I was going to stay away from. The question just came in very, very, very quickly. So I think what we said before is basically the chiluk that I think is good for the societies that we come from. Which is basically that if you're in a professional interaction or an interaction which is, which is with a lot of people and it's not specifically intimate. I'll just give you the work example. That's the best one for now. So at work, again, if you interact with females at work, I think that's normal for our society. And as long as it's done, not too much and not too personal, then that does not seem to be,
So there's actually a fine line over there because 100%, when you're sitting in your cubicle area or something or in a team meeting, you're interacting on a totally professional level. Then it's lunchtime.
Right.
Everyone goes to have lunch.
Right.
Do you preferably not go and sit down with the female team members and male ones together and just chat? And it's what I mean? It's it's much more informal.
Right.
There's a much more informal setting there than when you're actually working.
Right. I'm not sure if I want to give you any specific advice here, even though I have some ideas to say, but I'm not sure if I don't know if that's a good idea to.
I'm not overly social at work anyway.
So it's not a problem. Again, in theory, we could go both. Yeah.
Oh, that's the question. I mean, you can take it to an extreme, and then you've got Matrix has female Haredi workers who they're only females. They're working in an office with only women. Then they don't have a problem.
Right.
But it's very, very difficult to really do that in the big wide world.
Right.
Depending on your profession, it's very hard to have that sort of setup. Certainly in Chutz Laaretz, it's almost impossible.
Right. I think again, I'll just say my piece here, and if you want to add anything, I think that that's the kind of case where for our society, there is a sliding scale. And you may not say that it's absolutely usser, but at the same time, you have to sort of be aware and just sort of make sure that even if you're going to do it and it's, it's necessary and whatever, just that it remains, at least in your mind and also in terms of the interaction, not past a certain point, meaning not too intimate, not too, I don't want to use the word flirtatious, but... Exactly, politeness, and even a little bit of chit chat is not the worst thing in the world. But once it gets to be too much or too close, that put it this way, I'll give you this example again. It's not the best thing to say, but if your wife was there, saw what you were doing, and she wasn't with you, she was on the side, and she saw what you were doing, would she feel uncomfortable? Would she feel that you went too far? That may be one way. Again, it's just a suggestion. I'm not saying it's an absolute, but it's something to think about.
I would argue that's already too far. Whatever.
Okay.
I think I don't know.
Maybe I think you're right, but I'm saying
if you know your coworkers life story and their kids or their spouse's name and stuff like that, you probably know too much already.
Okay, again, that depends on the person. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to give that as an absolute. But also I personally think that if you're dealing with a larger crowd, it's a little bit easier to say that it's not as bad, that it's okay, than if you're dealing with more one-on-one, I'm a little more hesitant about. Again, it still may be a sliding scale. I'm not saying that it's us or if you take some of these approaches here, but that's the kind of thing where I feel like if you're talking about trying how to, you know, develop a little more kedusha and what it could lead to, and you see in the world today that unfortunately this does happen. This happens too often, and that's why we specifically have to dafka go out of the way to be more careful. But at least in your mind, you should, if it's anything which is one-on-one, it's not a, you know, which is not a specifically professional meeting, you know, it's more of a, you know, lunchtime type of thing. It's something to consider. Maybe I should try to, you know, pull back a little bit, or if there's additional people around, that would be better. Again, that's my personal thing. Again, if you deal with other situations of gatherings of people, like, you know, kiddush and other sorts of things like that, so again, there's a sliding scale. If you ask me personally, my personal perspective, again, there's other options here, obviously. Personally, I think that if there's a lot of people around and, you know, you're with your wife or whatever, and you're talking to other people, you know, whatever, like, you know, how are you? You know, not excessively intimate conversation. I think that's not the worst thing in the world. I think that, you know, in our society, I think that that may be okay. Though again, there is room for being more machmir. And if anyway, things at these kinds of settings are a little bit more separate, then it may not be best to go out of your way to go to the other side, obviously. But you know, but that type of, you know, direction might be what to work with. If you're like, you know, somebody at a meal at your house, you know, with another family. So again, personally, I think if you're there with your wife and you're having a conversation with everybody together, you know, then personally, again, I'm not of the school of thought that thinks that's the worst thing in the world. Once it starts to be that, you know, one, the male talks to the, you know, the husband talks to the other wife, and the wife talks to their husband for like more than like a couple minutes, like, you know, a 15-minute conversation already, you know, which is just that already, you know, you have to think whether that's the, you know, think in your mind, does this seem to be the most appropriate thing to do? That's my perspective. Again, there are other perspectives, and it depends on which society you're in and whatever, but anything to add to that point before?
I just wanted a general thought. You know, you sort of began, some of these things seem extreme. We just also have to remember that, unfortunately, we see daily on the news that when they're, you know, that while maybe it is extreme in certain situations, but we see what happens when these barriers are breached. We unfortunately see every day on the news about another case, and another case, another case, another case, where the breach of the barriers leads to things which you ultimately don't want to get to. So, you know, yes, maybe, you know, there are certain things that may be extreme, but there's a reason, because it's to protect overall. So, you know, so again, so this need for the balance of sort of functioning in a quote unquote normal manner. At the same time, being aware that, you know, the world is not a simple place.
Yeah, that's good.
There's a group coming out on the side. We have our big bar mitzvahs, and all the family comes in from abroad. Separate seating required.
Yeah, good.
You
question.
Come out on that
I
one.
I wasn't gonna.
You don't have to.
So
again, prefer you not. But,
okay, I'm not gonna say it's usher. I think there's different. I think there's different minhagim. I think there's room for different practices on that. If you feel comfortable having it separate, there's absolutely room to do that. And people shouldn't start saying bad things about you. But at the same time, you know, those of us that have mixed seating, especially when you're dealing with couples and, you know, families, there's definitely, in the Levush I mentioned before and others, there's definitely what to be to rely on for that. Many, you know, Rabbanim have had, you know, some are prefer mixed seating, but there are, some prefer separate seating, but there definitely have been cases in the past 50 years that they're, you know, they've had, you know, mixed seating. And it doesn't seem to be, you know,
it's a very fine line, because the more opportunities that you have interaction with you know, people from opposite gender, the more likely you are to interact with them in future as well. But I'm like thinking, for example, at a simcha in Yad Binyamin,
right?
I don't think I'd really have anything to say to any of your wives, because I don't know them,
right?
You know, so even if we're sitting at the same table, I wouldn't really have anything to say to them anyway.
Okay, good for you.
But the problem, of course, then is that, you know, the more interactions you have, then the more, you know.
So again, I don't think we should come out with a, you know, it's, there's room for both. All I would say is that if, you know, in those situations where it comes up, that it's, again, if you're there with your wife and they're like, it's already, you know, there's already, I think that's already makes it much better. But just, you know, something to keep in mind is just, you know, you don't have to think about it. Just if it goes in the direction by some chance that it gets to be a little more intimate on an individual personal level, which doesn't usually happen, at least in our community, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen elsewhere, then it just means keep on, you know, realize maybe you know, be careful here. Maybe shouldn't go farther than that. But again, I'm not giving any more specific guidelines because I don't think it's a good idea. But you get the point. I think you get the point. I think the point is clear. And based on that, I'll just finish off with the halachas we mentioned before without going through every single one. The ones that are, according to everybody, are still on the books, definitely histakless with intention to get hana, to get pleasure and enjoyment, that I think basically is still, based on what we said and based on what the poskim say, that's off limits. Again, the idea of, you know, interaction of yakel roshima, flirtatious and, you know, winking and all those kind of things in general, I think that's, you know, off limits. Everybody agrees that's more intimate and that would be a problem. But again, the questions of greetings, again, our greetings today, some poskim say our greetings today are not really like the greetings back then. And again, if it's something that's common, it's nice, it's polite to greet somebody and say, hello, how are you? You know, then good Shabbos, whatever. So I don't think today in our society we would say that you should ask for that. That's included in everything we're saying here based on our Hankin, that in our society there may be more intimate makil. Again, the rest of the issues we didn't go through every single one, but you can sort of figure out which one is which. There's a lot more. Again, this is just sort of an overview of these kind of things. And I guess our hope is that we should use this as an opportunity not to be scared off and say, oh my gosh, I can't deal with this religion anymore. Rather say, you know, this is an opportunity for enhanced kedusha. How can I best serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How can I, you know, be healthy? And again, we're not going to go into this now, but in terms of my shalom bias and my own family, you know, obviously, you know, what's the best way to deal with that and make that enhanced? And, you know, what's the best way to do what I think is right for what I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of me? And at the same time, be able to, you know, to be normal and to function in a society in a productive way and not to feel like you're a hermit and people think you're a terrible person because you don't talk to anybody and, you know, something like that. We should also get to that point and be able to figure out the balance and, you know, serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu and not be tempted by anything out there that should not be tempting us. And
Shukar. You can turn off the comments. I want to be off the record. What about the